opportunity to present my work. This work was done with the collaboration of Carlos Hoyos from Ovadia University and Yaron Oz from Tel Aviv University. So my talk is Lifshitz hydrodynamic, and I will start with motivation. Then I will do a bit an overview of the relativistic hydrodynamic. And then I will talk about Lifshitz scaling and symmetries, and then I will and review a bit Lifshitz hydrodynamic, and then I will focus on what we did on the subject. And at the end, of course, I will conclude. Okay, so let me start with the motivation. So a wide variety of metallic ferromagnets and antiferromagnets have been observed to develop a quantum critical behavior when the temperature is driven to zero through the application of magnetic fields, doping, or pressure. In these cases, the properties of the metal are is drastically characterized by the quantum fluctuation, which depart drastically from the regular Fermi liquid, and they form a metallic state, which known sometimes as non-Fermi liquids or a strange metal. So this is what we call the strange metal. In this phase, some quantities exhibit a universal behavior, such as the resistivity, which is linear in the temperature. Such universal properties are believed to be the consequence of quantum criticality. So I will assume that it is driven by quantum criticality. And at that point, there is a Lifshitz scaling symmetry. At that critical point, there is a Lifshitz scaling symmetry. So let me show you the phase diagram. So this is a continuous phase transition that happened in zero temperature. And this is the quantum critical point. However, if I will raise the temperature a bit, there will be a region in which inherits the properties and the symmetries that relates to this point. So basically, I'm looking at this point, and I'm using the fact that there is a Lifshitz scaling symmetry, which is inherited from this point. Okay. So I will describe the, I will use the hydrodynamic description. And as you know, there is a hydrodynamic description for quantum critical systems, like the conformal, like the cases of conformal field theory at finite temperatures. And the regime that I will focus on is the regime that the quantum critical is the regime in which the thermal fluctuation are much, much more smaller than the size of the system, and both of them are much smaller than the quantum fluctuation. So I will be in the region that I showed you previously. So the main thing that I want to achieve is to describe the electron in the strange metal, and I will use the hydrodynamic description in order to give such a description to the electron. Okay, so let me start with the review. So I will review the basic stuff of relativistic hydrodynamic, and then I will do the same for the Lifshitz hydrodynamic. So let me start. So what is hydrodynamics? Hydrodynamics is an effective field theory of flow energy dynamics of the conserved charges, which remain after integrating out high energy degrees of freedom. What are the degrees of freedom that are used for the system? So we have the energy density, epsilon, the pressure, P. We also have the temperature, the relativistic fluid velocity, which is constrained to be minus one, its magnitude. We also have an entropy density. And if the fluid is charged, we have a chemical potential and charge density or particle number density. The equations which govern the motion of the fluid are the equation of state, the conservation equations, d mu, t mu, nu, or if we have a current, then it's d mu, j mu equal to zero. And we have the first law of thermodynamic. Okay. Now I want to focus on a specific ingredient in this in the fluid, which is the stress energy tensor. And I want to see what the symmetries of the what are the symmetry which govern the Lorentz what are the symmetry of Lorentz fluid. So Lorentz fluid, which has 6 generators, 3 rotation and 3 boosts. And those give rise to a 6 conserved current, which result in a symmetric stress energy tensor. So this is the main point of this slide. The stress energy tensor is symmetric. In the Lifshitz case, there won't be any boosts, and it will give us a different kind of stress energy tensor. So in the Lorentz case, the stress energy tensor is a symmetric one, symmetric in the indices. So now I want to divide space into two directions. I will divide it to the direction of the parallel to the fluid velocity and perpendicular to the fluid velocity. I will introduce the projection tensor, P mu nu, which projects quantities in the direction perpendicular to the fluid velocity. And the thermodynamic stress energy tensor will be defined in this manner, epsilon nu mu nu plus the pressure times the projection tensor. And as you all know, in the rest frame, we have the T00 is the energy density, and TII, the special component, is the pressure. So now we want to move on and go to hydrodynamics. So in hydrodynamics, we divide the regions, we divide the big region into smaller regions. And in each region, we have a thermodynamic equilibrium. So now, basically, what will happen is that the thermodynamic variables and also the four velocity will be depend on x mu on the position and on time. So now, if you write the ideal stress energy, the ideal part of the stress energy tensor, it will be dependent on the on x mu. And I wrote here a T mu nu zero, which is the ideal part. So now, what I will do, I will expand in a derivative expansion. But before I'll do it, let's see what are the equation of which govern the fluid motions. So the ideal equation of motion or the conservation equations can be divided into two parts. The equations are d mu t mu nu equal to zero, and I can project them onto the velocity or project them parallel to the velocity with the projection tensor. So I have here two sets of equations. This equation relates theta, which is the expansion of the fluid, which defined as d mu of u mu, and it connects it to the derivative of the thermodynamic quantity, which is the energy density. And here I have a connection between the acceleration of the fluid, u mu, d nu, u nu, d nu of u mu, which connects to the derivative of the pressure. So basically, you can see that I can exchange derivative of the thermodynamic quantities with the derivative of the for velocity, and I will use it. You will use it in a minute, because now I want to build the most general stress energy tensor that I can using a derivative expansion. So this is the ideal part. T zero mu nu is the ideal part, and this is the dissipative part, which contains derivatives. Okay, so how to build such a term? So we need to build it from all possible terms that we can build, that we can use, using Lorentz symmetry. But we have some redundancies. The first, as I mentioned before, we have the redundancies of the equation of motion. So I will write only the term that will appear here will be terms that will be derivative of the velocity alone, because I can exchange derivative of the velocity with derivative of the thermodynamic quantities by the equation of motion. The second thing is is choosing a frame. So what I can do is to choose a frame, for instance, the Landau frame. In this case, T mu nu times u nu is equal to the energy density times u mu. In this frame, there are vanishing energy dissipation. So this will be the so this is the equation which says that the energy dissipation will be zero. So now let's see what's happened or how to write the most general single derivative stress energy tensor under this restriction or ambiguities that I mentioned. So the most general one is this one, which is eta, which eta is the shear viscosity times the shear tensor. And here we see the bulk viscosity times the expansion of the fluid. And they are, the shear viscosity, the shear tensor is defined in that manner. So this is the most general single derivative stress energy tensor that we can build out of the symmetries and the restrictions. Okay, so now I want to restrict the transport coefficients. Basically, I want to restrict what the possible value that eta or zeta can take. So I will use the entropy, the second law of thermodynamics, or the local version of the second law of hydrodynamics. So first of all, I will define an energy and entropy density, which will be the entropy current, which will be the entropy density times the four velocity. And in order to restrict the transport coefficient in the stress energy tensor, I will use this local version of the second law of thermodynamics, which is d mu s mu will be that it will be greater or equal to zero. This is the demand that I will impose. So this embed in its two kind of constraints. The first one are inequality constraints, which is d mu of s mu greater or equal from zero. And the second one are equality constraints, d mu s mu is equal to zero. I will elaborate on these two constraints in a minute. Let me start by by giving example for the first constraint. So let's take the single derivative stress energy tensor that we build and use some thermodynamic relations. We can see that the divergence of the entropy current is equal to eta times sigma squared, so eta times a squared quantity, a positive definite quantity, times zeta over d, d is the spatial dimension, times theta squared, which is again a positive definite quantity. So now the restriction for it to be greater or equal to zero amounts to say that eta is greater or equal to zero, and also zeta is greater or equal to zero. So this is the inequality constraints that comes from the entropy current. So now I want to show you a second way to define an entropy current. And the second way to define entropy current is just by looking, by calculating the conservation equation, d mu of t mu nu, project them onto the velocity. And then what I can get by some algebraic manipulation, I will get, so this is what I mean. I will get this. And then by some algebraic manipulation, I will get four divergence of a quantity in the brackets equal to this left hand side. And what I will do is identify the thing in the brackets as the entropy current. So basically, in the slide that I will show you in a minute, I will do the same kind of technique, and I will basically see that S times see that the thing in the brackets will be the entropy current. This is the identification that I will do. Okay, so the thing in the brackets will be the entropy current of the theory. Any questions so far? Okay. So let me add to the theory. So basically, I can add to the theory some current. I can add n currents. So J mu will be the conserved current in the theory, which will be defined as the density number, time QA times U mu, the four velocity, plus a dissipative correction, which will be nu mu, and they will be perpendicular to the four velocity. So, and the nu mu part will contain derivative part. So this is, and of course, to every conserved card, I can associate a chemical potential. So this is the theory that I want to consider now, but for simplicity, I will consider only one additional conserved current. So in this theory, I want to identify the entropy current. So the entropy current of this theory will be from the conservation equation. The conservation equation that I will look on are those d mu t mu nu projected on the four velocity, plus mu times d mu j mu. And now by using some algebraic manipulation, I will get four divergents of some brackets equal to this left-hand side. So I would identify the thing in the brackets as the entropy current. So now the entropy current will be what is written in the brackets. And let me mention what will happen, or how this thing will restrict the stress energy tensor or the dissipative part of the entropy of the conserved current, nu mu. So what I want to impose is the second law of thermodynamic, of hydrodynamic, which means that this quantity needs to be greater or equal to zero. That means that this, for instance, let's look on this term, it must be a positive definite quantity. That means that nu mu must be sigma, which is a new transport coefficient, times temperature, p mu nu d mu of mu over t. And if I will plug this here, I will get a positive quantity. But observe that if I will say that nu mu, the constitutive relation of nu mu will be connected to a mu, to the acceleration, then if I will plug a mu here, I won't get a positive definite quantity. So it prohibits nu mu to be built out of a mu, and it says that nu mu must be the dissipative part of the current must be in that form. And it also restricts sigma to be positive, greater or equal to zero. Okay, so it was clear? Okay. So now I want to review. Actually, I will add an anomaly and external sources. So this was done by Son and Soroka, and was broadened by Yasha Neyman and Yaron Oz in 2009 and 2010. So I will consider, as I mentioned, two external sources. I will consider the magnetic field and the electric field. And so now the conservation equations are no longer, the currents are no longer conserved. And we have the d mu of t mu nu is equal to the Lorentz force. And the d mu of j mu is equal to c, which is the anomaly, times e dot b. So those are the equations. And now I will want to write the constitutive relations of the entropy current, and I want to write the constitutive relation of nu mu, of the dissipative part of the entropy, of the conserved current of j mu. And I will consider a parity breaking theory. For instance, I will consider two terms, which two vectors, pseudo vector, omega mu and b mu, which are both parity odd. And I will write the most general thing that I can write for the constitutive relation of the entropy of the conserved charge, conserved current. And this is the most general thing that I can write. I'll also add two terms to the entropy current. And then I want to see what are the restrictions on the transport coefficient. So I want to see what are the restrictions. So what are xi omega, the transport coefficient which multiply omega mu, and what is xi b, which multiply the magnetic field. So I will take the divergence of the entropy current. I will only look on the parity breaking part of this of the divergence, and what I will get these equations. This equation. And if you can see here, omega mu is not a positive definite quantity. So this is not a positive definite quantity as well. And those two are not a positive definite quantity. That means that every brackets need to vanish separately in order to satisfy the second law. So this is the equality constraint that I showed you before. So now I have four differential equations, and they can be solved. So the solution will be by changing variable and using some thermodynamic relation, and what we will get are those two transport coefficients, xi omega and xi b, and we can solve them, and you can see that as soon as Soroka got that they are proportional to the anomaly, to c. So this is basically what connect the transport coefficient to the anomaly. Plus we have also two integration constants, which are beta and gamma, which terms were added by Yasha and Yaronos. And beta can appear in an if we are consider an axial conserved charge, and gamma can appear if the theory is a parity breaking one. Okay, so up until now, there are any questions? Are there any questions? Okay, so this was just a review. Let me start by considering the Lifshitz case. So let's start to talk about Lifshitz scaling. So Lifshitz scaling treats differently to time and space. T goes to lambda z times t, and xi goes to lambda time xi. So basically the difference is introduced by this dynamical exponent z. So z is the dynamical exponent which treats differently to time and space. So we have a scale symmetry, and by the scale symmetry we can basically know how the energy density and the pressure scale with the temperature. We can also, by the thermodynamic relation, know, we can find how the entropy scale with the temperature. And also by scaling symmetry alone, we can find the equation of state. And the equation of state is Z epsilon equal to D, which is the spatial dimension times the pressure. So in Lifshitz, for a Lifshitz fluid, this is the equation of state. And I always, and what I will use is just scaling symmetry alone. So now let's, as I mentioned before, let's see what is the stress energy tensor. What are the symmetries of the stress energy tensor now? So as I mentioned before, we don't have a rotational, sorry, we have rotational invariance, but we don't have the boosts. what we do have, so we have three rotational generators, four translations, and one dilation generator. And as I mentioned, we don't have the boosts, so that's this amount, the T0i won't be equal to Ti0. So we have an antisymmetric part in the stress energy tensor in the zero i component. So it won't be symmetric, and this is basically what will be new in Lifshitz cytodynamic. I can add some new transport coefficient to the antisymmetric part of the stress energy tensor. And I will do it in a moment. You can observe that Tij is equal to Tji because we still have a rotational invariance. And we can also see what is the trace of the stress energy tensor. And this is the trace equation of the stress energy tensor. And if Z is equal to one, you get the known conformal case that the trace must vanish. Okay, but now I want to introduce a constant velocity, in order to describe thermodynamic or hydrodynamic. So I will define my generators with this constant velocity, and it will amount. So the condition that Tij is equal to Tji, that the rotational invariance is still maintained, is now can be written in that manner. Okay, and I will use it to decompose the stress energy tensor in a moment. And now, of course, the trace identity will be a bit different because I'm using a velocity. Okay, so this is the generalization that we can do. And now I want to introduce the hydrodynamic. So it was first conceived by Carlos Hoyos and Yaronos in 2012. So the hydrodynamic equations are the same, d mu of t mu nu is equal to zero. We still want to impose a frame, and I will impose the Landau frame to remove unnecessary ambiguities. But now let's see what the stress energy, what is the form of the stress energy tensor. So the form of the stress energy tensor will be this, which you can see that this term is just the ideal part of the stress energy tensor. Then pi s is the symmetric part of the stress energy tensor, which are the same as in the relativistic case. And we can add an antisymmetric part, pi antisymmetric, which will be here because of the broken boost symmetries. So this term that I add here, that I added here, is just a term which imposes the Landau frame. So this is the stress energy tensor. And as I mentioned, the single derivative term of the stress energy tensor is the symmetric part of it is the same as in the relativistic theory. But now the new transport coefficient, as I mentioned, will appear in the anti-symmetric part of the stress energy tensor, pi mu nu anti-symmetry. And the condition that boost but not rotational invariance is broken will be, as I showed you before, that if I will use the projection tensor on the anti-symmetric part of the stress energy tensor, it must vanish. This term, this equation, and the knowledge that T zero I not equal to T I zero is basically, with them can decompose the anti-symmetric part of the stress energy tensor in this manner. So this is the four velocity times a four vector. And the four vector, V mu, V nu will be basically what the thing that is, that will contain all the transport, the new transport coefficients in Lifshitz theory. So in order to provide an anti-symmetric stress energy tensor in Lifshitz theory, we need to write the most general four vector that we can write, and in it will be the new transport coefficients. Okay. So let's do it. So let's do it for the neutral case. And let's take the example of only one derivative. So I will use the conservation equation, d mu of t mu nu, projected on the four velocity equal to zero. And by some algebraic manipulation, I will get the divergence of the entropy current, and it will be equal to this vector times a mu. Because I want to impose the second law of hydrodynamic, it says that v mu must be proportional to a mu in order for it to be a positive definite quantity. So the new thing, the transport coefficient, which is new, in this case, in the Lifshitz case, is alpha, which is in the anti-symmetric part of the stress energy tensor. And it must be alpha u mu times a nu. And this is a new result that was found by Carlos and Yaron, as I mentioned before. And this is different from the relativistic case. Okay, by using some dimensional analysis, of course, we can find the eta, zeta, and alpha, how they scale with the temperature. And this is how they scale, because we have scale invariance, so this is how they relate to the temperature. And now, I want to consider a charge, the charge case, as I showed you before in the previous slide, what happened in the relativistic case with the charge for a charge fluid. I want to do the same thing in Lifshitz hydrodynamics. So this work was done by Carlos Hoyos and Bom Su and Yaron Oz as well. So I can add charge. I can have a conserved, an additional conserved current, which will be the dissipative part of the conserved current will be nu mu. And I can introduce an additional transport coefficient. So now the stress energy tensor, or the vector that defines the odd part of the stress energy tensor, will be alpha times a mu plus an additional term because of the charge current. And the charge current will be in this form. Now if I'll do the same calculation, I can get the same calculation for the entropy current. I can get some restriction on those transport coefficients, on alpha, which is the new one, alpha prime, which is the additional new transport coefficient for the charge case, and sigma. And this is the restriction that they got from the second law of thermodynamic or hydrodynamic, the local version of it. Okay, so are there any questions up until now? So now I want to mention what we did in the Lipschitz case. So we basically introduced an anomaly and two U1 current. We introduced the electric field and the magnetic field. We did the case for the 3+1 dimension, but we also did the 2+1 dimension, which I will briefly mention in the near the end of my talk. So we also introduced, as Sonnen and Soroka did, the vorticity and the magnetic field, which defined in this manner, which are defined in this manner. But now the new thing is that we have the anti-symmetric part of the stress energy tensor. So we introduced new transport coefficients. So we have beta omega, which multiply the vorticity, and beta b, which multiply the magnetic field. And here it's the same thing as done in the Lorentz case, which is xi omega time omega mu, and xi b, the transport coefficient, which multiply the magnetic field. So let's do the same trick. Let's calculate d mu of s mu and consider only the parity breaking terms. So this is the parity breaking term from the of the entropy current, and we get four equation as well. We have one equation, but all those brackets must vanish separately, as in the previous case. So we have four equations, and we can solve them. And what happens if we solve them? So what is happening is that we have two kinds of solution. So of course we solve it by changing variables and using some thermodynamic relations, and we have two kinds of solution. The first kind is the one that z is different than one. If z is different than one, this is the solution. We have that beta b. We have beta b just by scaling symmetry. Then beta omega and xi b and xi omega are produced from the restriction of d mu s mu greater or equal to zero. And you can see here that cb and c omega are just constants. Xi b and xi omega are again proportional to the anomaly. And there is some additional new term that you can see here. But now let's see what happened for the z equal 1 case. So if z is equal 1, then we retrieve, or we get that beta b and beta omega are 0. And xi b and xi omega are just the same one that we got in the relativistic case. So basically, this is quite interesting. We got the same result as in the relativistic case. The odd terms in the stress energy tensor vanishes, and we have the same same transport coefficient, the same dependence of the transport coefficient on the temperature and the chemical potential as we got in the relativistic case. So I will mention it in the end, but basically the question is, why is that? This is, I think, an open question for us. Yes?
I think the exponents of t, the signs of the exponents of t changes. Is it okay that you get a kind of negative sign in the exponent?
You mean the, for instance, in beta b?
Yeah, in beta b. I was just wondering.
Yeah, this is just by scaling symmetry. I didn't use the any.
Okay.
The beta b is produced only by scaling. So. Okay. So in order it for make sense, I want to see how to. I want to. Understand what happens in the non-relativistic limit for the electron that moving in a strange metal. And I will do it in a minute, but I didn't thought what if it's exclude that z, if z is greater than 2, I don't think it's imposed any kind of restriction. But I show you in a minute what will happen in the non-relativistic case, and you can interpret it. Okay, so this is what I want to do now. So now I want to basically what we wanted to figure out is what happens to a fluid with a Galilean, with a broken Galilean boost. So in order to describe a fluid with a broken Galilean boost, we can do it from bottom up approach. We can just build the consistency relations using the Galilean symmetry, then break it, or we can take the null relativistic limit of the Lifshitz fluid, and we can then get a broken Galilean boost fluid. So this is what we did. So we grouped together. So we considered the case when c is goes to infinity, and we consider the case where the velocities are much smaller than c, and group them together. In addition, we had to expand epsilon, the energy density. So we expanded it and introduced a mass density and internal energy. We also expanded in the velocity in c the charge density and the chemical potential, and also we did the same for the electric and magnetic field. And then we wanted to know what are the equations, the conservation equations, and that governs the fluid. So we took the non-relativistic limit of this equation, of the conservation equations. So the non-relativistic equation, the non-relativistic limit of this equation gave us to the first order in C, the continuity equation, just the regular continuity equation. The subleading order gave us the Navier-Stokes equations, which are these. So this is the subleading term of the equations of the non-relativistic limit of the equation that I showed you, of the conservation equations. Okay, and sorry. Okay, so now we want to understand what are the restrictions that comes from the second law. So we used d mu of s mu and took the non-relativistic limit of this. And what we found is, again, some interesting stuff. We found that the transport coefficient beta omega vanishes. So we don't have a term that's proportional to the vorticity in the non-relativistic limit. And we also find that beta b is equal to c, the anomaly, over t. So basically beta b defined only by the relativistic anomaly. So this is quite interesting that you can say something from the relativistic theory to the non-relativistic theory. Okay, so as I mentioned, the Navier-Stokes equation are those, but they are a bit different from the regular one because we don't have boost invariance. Then the p that is here. Oh, so this is just the Lorentz force, and this is the regular stuff that you have in the relativistic limit. But p is the momentum density, and it's different from the mass density because we have Galilean symmetry is broken. So now we have that the momentum density is changed by additional three transport coefficients, which are alpha t, which I introduced earlier, and also beta b. So this is the only term that contains this is the only term which contains an odd contribution. So now this term, I will focus on this term in a minute. And it will be basically give us the Kalerman magnetic effect in non-relativistic theory. So let me show you how we can model it and how we can measure it, even in the lab. So I will start by using a Drudet model, and I will model the collective motion of the electron in a strange metal as a charged fluid moving to a static medium that produces a drag on the fluid. This is the drag term, which I add to the theory. So this is lambda is the drag coefficient. So we have d mu, j mu is just the anomaly, and d mu of t mu nu is just the Lorentz force minus the drag term that happens to be in this model. So we describe a steady state, which implies that the external fields are constant in time. So now the Navier-Stokes are also changed. They are changed just by this drag term that is here. And now I want to introduce a particular setup in order to see how the beta B coefficient what does the beta b coefficient to the theory? So I will use this kind of setup. I will use a constant electric field in the x direction and a slowly varying magnetic field in the z direction, but it will be depend on the x axis. So now, of course, I will expand in the velocity derivative, and to first to zero order, I will just get the jx equals rho over lambda times x, which is none other than the Ohm law that you all know. The subleading correction will correct this term, but we also have two different kind of currents that appear in the theory that point into different directions. One is from the Lorentz force, so we have Jy equal to this. This is just from the Lorentz force, but the other current, which is you can see it in a Galilean invariant theory, is this one. Sorry, and you can see here that Jz is in the direction of the magnetic field, Bz. And of course, there is this beta b coefficient, which is only introduced in a Lifshitz theory. So basically, what you can do is just try and measure this kind of phenomena in the lab, and maybe try and restrict or find what beta b is. So this is the Nyon. And it's exciting that you can maybe measure it in a lab. So let me just introduce some several work that was done in the subject. We also did the 2 plus 1 dimension. And in it, we saw that there is something which is called a transverse Hall current that generates. Basically, what is happening is that we have a current that produced by the electric field, but it is not in the same direction as the electric field. Other related Lifshitz topics that were done in the subject by Carlos Bomsu and Yaron Oz are they try to implement to see what they can get from the holographic point of view and the partition function. Method, and what they got are just the zero order Navier-Aksok equation here, and also the zero order stress energy tensor, but they found the Lifshitz equation of state from the partition function method. And there is another work that was done by Shira, Carlos and Yaron, which is the Lifshitz superfluid, and they found 8 new parity event transport coefficients. Okay, so let me summarize what we did in the talk. So we discussed the constitutive relations of fluid for a system with Lifshitz symmetry and broken parity. When the condition of Boost invariance is relaxed, there can be new terms in the energy momentum tensor that can be grouped in the vector v mu. So this is this vector v mu, which is the anti-symmetric part of the stress energy tensor. In 3 plus 1 dimension, we consider an external sources and a parity breaking terms, and we introduced two new transport coefficients, beta omega and beta b. We still got that the chiral anomaly is present in xi omega and xi b. We found that in z equal 1, those transport coefficients vanish, and we get the same thing that we got in the relativistic theory. Then we try to model to look on the non-relativistic limit, and we found that the momentum density is changed by the because of Lifshitz symmetry. So we have and it's changed and it's different from the mass current. This is the differences, these three terms, and we use a Drudet model with a drag term to find what is called the non-relativistic chiral magnetic effect that can be measured in the lab. Okay, so let me just mention some future question of future research that can be done. So the thing that we did is just for a single derivative terms. You can do it, you can try and ask the question, what happens if you consider a higher contribution? So basically second order contribution or even more, which make the computation much more complex. And then to find what is the stress energy tensor in that case, and what are the new transport coefficient in the second order for the second order theory. An interesting thing that we tackled in our work is that we found that the Lorentz in the odd sector of the theory, we got the same in the Lifshitz z equal one, we got the same thing that we got in the Lorentz case. So this is quite interesting, and we are not sure what is the reason for it. Of course, this is not true for the even sector, because in the even sector, this is different. We still have the transport coefficient that can appear in the Lifshitz z equal to one case, but cannot appear in the Lorentz case. There is still some anti-symmetry term in the stress energy tensor. And of course, two things that can be done are just using the partition function or the holographic method beyond the zero order to find the Lifshitz hydrodynamic there. Okay, so thank you very much for attention.
So I actually have two questions for your two suggestions. So I thought that, so there were holographic constructions of Lifshitz thermodynamics, right? So is there any obstructions? Why can't you study hydrodynamics in those models? What do you mean find a holographic setup?
I mean, so they found a holographic setup just for the zero order. So without any dissipative part.
No, but as long as I construct a black hole, and I think people did that already, right? So as long as I construct a black hole which reproduces Lifshitz scaling thermodynamically, what's the obstruction of just taking that model and study hydrodynamics? Or I'm misunderstanding something.
I think that you won't find the anti-symmetric part in the stress energy tensor. I think you need to introduce some more structure to the theory.
Right.
Maybe
so that sort of was my third question. Okay. So in principle, in the holographic models, is whatever psi b can be zero, and we don't know if it is zero or not. Right? Is that
in the holographic model?
Well, I mean, we don't know. So you write down there in general, but it is possible that it's always zero. And as far as I understand, in the available holographic models, that thing is zero, psi b.
It could be, of course, it can be zero, but in the holographic model that there are no any dissipative part, they are just zero order, so no one can.
I don't understand that. See, that's what I don't understand. I mean, in a holographic model, if it is Lifshitz, I can do a hydrodynamic computations, I can see dissipative effects, I can compute shear viscosity, whatever, bulk viscosity. Why can't I do the gravity fluid correspondence there and see if that agrees with you or not? What am I missing? What's the obstruction?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think it can be done, but you need to introduce some more structure. You need to consider the stress energy tensor using the Virabine, I guess. So it can be done, basically.
And concerning the partition function thing, I mean, once you go beyond the leading order, then there will be a dissipative effect. So how do you deal with formulating a partition function for a model where there is a dissipation?
Okay, so yeah, I see what you mean. I think that what you can find are only maybe second order terms which are non-dissipative.
Right, so that was my understanding, that you can use partition function to get some idea about transport coefficients which are non-dissipative. Anomaly type thing, but you can't do it for the sort of.
The new effect that you found is associated to dissipative or non-dissipative transport coefficient.
So beta B was derived by the equality constraint, so it's a non-dissipative one.
Okay.
but the equality constraints, the mu is, S mu is equal to zero, so it's non dissipative kind of contribution.
The partition function analysis was done at zero order.
Yeah, it was done in zero order by in the same paper of Carlos and Bongs and Yoromer. They consider the charge fluid. They consider also the holographic case and also the partition function method.
Yeah,
yeah,
just a comment on this. So for relativistic fluids, all the second law consists of transport coefficients have been constructed to all orders.
No, to to so to second, I think the second order. No, to second order, they were constructed.
No, we constructed them basically as all orders.
Okay.
Gave an algorithm how to do that. And so I think you could shoot for doing the first point at all orders at one go.
Well. That would be interesting to see.
Sorry, can you explain? What's been constructed to all orders?
All the constituent relations which are consistent with the second law, classified and constructed. But the problem of constructing them has been reduced to constructing tensor structures. Or we can talk about it later, but my question was the way to do that taught us that the organizing principle is understanding the entropy current. So I'm wondering whether you see some general structure in the entropy current for the coefficient to construct.
I'm not sure because I'm not familiar with the work that you did. So I guess we can talk about it.
So are there any other interesting anomalies in the theory that are particularly interesting?
So we just consider the chiral anomaly. I'm not sure if there is a gravitational one because it's break scaling symmetry because of this is Lifshitz symmetry. So I'm not aware of any other.
Are there any other questions? All right, I'll thank you.
Thank you.